motherless from now, same horse behind. The child of Jacob awakened, opened up your eyes. From God's feet to see, all surrender to the light. Beware the lemon of the Pharisees.
That was one of our own brethren, Kurt Egger. I'm sorry about the static. The song is Beware the Leaven of the Pharisees. It was, it's available on the forum at Christigenia and under Christian Identity Music. I have to apologize for the static. It's available for download there, and it'll sound better on your computer than it did on mine. Hello, this is William Fink. It is Thursday, July 7th, 2011. The last several weeks, I've been addressing a certain group of Pharisees on my Monday night open forum program. And I thought I would talk about that for a few minutes. Yeah, you know, I even have to apologize to some extent, but because I've been given I'll call them the Nomians, right? And Eli is one of the Nomians. That they just put a great stress on our need to follow the law. And I've let that go because the law is important. It really is important. The laws of God, the moral laws of God are forever. There's no doubt. They're eternal. If we follow them, well, we'll always be blessed. And if we violate them, we'll always be cursed. That there's no doubt. However, it's been interpreted in Christian identity circles in a black and white way. Yet, you know, they insist that many Christian identity pastors insist that we put ourselves under the Old Testament laws. And first, from the words of Christ, we see that those laws, and the words of Jeremiah, well, we see that those laws have first been distorted by men to some degree. You think you have a copy of the law, and the pen of the scribes has made it a lie. That's a paraphrase of Jeremiah 8:8. Second, from the words of Christ, we see pretty consistently throughout the New Testament, we see examples set that the law is just not meet in every circumstance, and that's just the way it is. And no law can be given to men which is going to perfectly fit every circumstance. And that's why, and Yahweh himself qualifies this in the prophets, it's mercy he seeks and not sacrifice. There are going to be many occasions that arise in our lives where doing the right thing breaks the letter of the law. And that's an example that Christ set for us and rebuked the Pharisees over pretty consistently, that there are times when love for our brethren is going to cause us to violate the letter of the law. That's just the way it is. And that's a clear example in the New Testament. But it's mercy and love towards each other that we have to learn first. That this argument is played out around the idea of marriage and adultery. And adultery is a sin. There's no doubt that adultery is a sin. That there is no doubt we're not to commit adultery. There is also no doubt that in the ideal world, that a woman and a man should both be virgins, and that sex is marriage. Once you have that sexual intercourse act, you're joining yourself to a woman. That is marriage. Now, some people want to put some kind of mystical connotation on this one flesh idea, that the two become one flesh. But you know, it says in the scripture that when a man joins himself to a woman, and everywhere it appears, it says the two shall become one flesh. And I don't put a mystical connotation on that. Rather, it's pretty obvious to me that when a man joins himself to a woman, the two become one flesh in the children. And it's also very obvious that there are plenty of occasions in Scripture that when a woman had not been a virgin and got married, that her children were nevertheless very often blessed. And there's many examples of this in the scripture. What one striking one is Adam and Eve. And the people that are debating with me, yeah, you know, this debate started when I took a certain position that even though sex is, there's no such thing in the eyes of the law as sex outside of marriage, right? When you're having sex, that means you're married. If you're having sex with somebody that's already married, you're committing adultery, That's the eternal moral code of Yahweh, and that's the ideal that we should all seek to live up to. And if we hadn't lived up to it, and I'm sure extremely few of us have, well, that's at least the ideal that we should teach our children. Now, today, in 99% of all people, I would say, I think I could honestly say 99% of all Americans are not virgins when they get married. But we live in a society of deceit. The whole world lies under the power of the devil. And I was called a hireling because I would think that when a couple who realize that, a married couple, right? Who realize that their relationship started contrary to the perfect laws of God, that one or the other of them were not virgins, especially the woman, that's just the way it is, were not virgins when they first got married. That these people, these certain Christian Pharisees, if they're indeed Christians, that they would insist that this couple, they put each other away. And not have sexual relations anymore. And that, to me, is a real sin. And I was called a hireling by a certain clown for having that attitude. But I brought up and they didn't answer this at all. They didn't answer any of the scripture I've raised. That they just make ad hominem attacks, and they whine like little girls behind the scenes or on their anonymous blogs. That they, what they didn't answer was that our whole race started under those very circumstances, and when Eve was violated by the serpent, and everybody in True Seedline Christian Identity agrees on that, and gave birth to Cain, Abel, who was fathered by Adam, Abel was still considered righteous, even though he followed Cain in the womb, or maybe even shared it with him. If you want to believe they were twins, it doesn't matter to me. And Eve, as part of her punishment for allowing herself to be seduced by the serpent, she was told that her desire, meaning her sexual appetite, her desire would be to her husband, and in sorrow she would bear children. She certainly did bear those children in sorrow because Cain killed Abel, right? And that was the result of her sin. Even Adam went on to have continued sexual relations, and Yahweh put his stamp of approval on that. And Seth was born, and then our race descended down through Seth, who was a replacement for Abel, and was blessed by God. And Adam, if we look at Adam at Genesis chapter 5, went on, apparently with Eve, to have many other sons and daughters. In fact, one shouldn't think that it was with anybody but Eve. So we see that a relationship which started imperfectly was given a stamp of approval by Yahweh. There's another example in David and Bathsheba. While David skirted the letter of the law of adultery by having Bathsheba's husband slain, He still committed a major sin there. And both Solomon and Nathan descended from Bathsheba and David. And that's the line which Christ came from. So I would challenge these turkeys that want to lord over other men's relationships with their wives. I would challenge them to show me in Scripture where they have any right at all to do that, and where it's necessary that a man puts his wife away if he realizes that she wasn't a virgin. Because once you commit yourself to a woman, whether it's wrong or it's right initially, if that woman has no man claiming to be her husband, she's yours. You're stuck with her, and you've made a commitment to her. And you can't defraud her of that expectation and that commitment to a normal sexual and reproductive life. You can't defraud her of that, according to Scripture. And you can't defraud her of that without further adding to your sin. You're not helping yourself, and you're not helping our race. And these modern-day Pharisees, that's exactly what they are. They want to lord over other people with the letter of the law, and they don't even have the letter of the law themselves. Well, when we look at the law of the virgin, I'm sorry, I forget exactly where it was. It's in Deuteronomy. It says that it says that if a man takes a wife, and if he finds some uncleanness in her and returns her to her parents and says, "I found her not a maiden," then the parents, that they have to produce the tokens of the woman's virginity, and which is the bedsheet of the marriage night. And if they don't have it, well, they have to suffer accordingly by taking the maiden back. And if they have it, then the man suffers, and he's commanded to more or less abide with that woman. Well, what they miss, these Christian Pharisees, is they miss where it says, if a man finds uncleanness in a woman, if a man takes a maiden and finds uncleanness in her. Yet, you know, if you take a woman to wife and don't find her a virgin, there's no law that commands you to bring her back to her parents. There's no law that commands you to put her away. So I have to say that Scripture leaves that to the decision of the man. And I would have to say that if I found a young woman, and I'm using myself as an example because I'm dreaming right now. I'm just kidding, really. I am. I don't foresee getting married again, but we don't know what God has planned for us. If I found a young woman next week and she was of marriageable and childbearing age, because, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the only real reason for sex is childbearing, right? I'm not talking outside of the normal moral boundaries whatsoever. Well, if I found a woman of childbearing age and she chose to, and she was happy to be my wife, and I found her not to be a virgin, but I know that nobody else has a claim on her as yet, you know, as a husband, that there's no other man with a claim on this woman, and perhaps she was not a virgin for many reasons. I mean, simple indiscretion in our youth, it is enough to lose one's virginity today, right? Pretty quickly. And most of our youth are indiscreet today. That's because Satan has, well, where he had one Eve in the book of Genesis, now Satan has millions of Eves to deceive, and we are in that predicament. And while Adam was not deceived in the transgression, today we have millions of Adams who sure as hell are deceived, right along with Eves, right along with the women. Well, if I took this woman, and I knew she had no claim on her, nobody else was claiming to be her husband, and I, whatever the circumstances are, I knew it was pretty legitimate that she was what we would call single, right? Even though we know that she had been married at one time. And I decided to make her my wife. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not really violating the law, even though it is adultery in the sense that, yes, she's a woman that's been put away. But it's a lot of men would take a woman and not even realize she wasn't a virgin, right? And as far as I'm concerned, it's between me and the woman and God. And if I brought her home, I don't see how anybody could criticize me for that without themselves becoming judges of law. And of course, I would expect to be excoriated if I came home with a woman that was clearly somebody else's wife. That's evil. That's wicked. There's no doubt. Yet, you know, Christ spells out the laws of adultery in the New Testament on several occasions. And he's right, of course. He said, "He who puts away his wife commits adultery for another woman and takes another woman commits adultery. And he who marries a woman who has been put away commits adultery." There's no doubt. But Christ also said that he who puts his wife away causes her to commit adultery. And that's the practical and permissible will of God speaking, because there's no doubt in Greek culture, especially, maybe not so much today, but in Greek culture where a woman couldn't hold property. A woman was property. A woman couldn't hold property in the Hellenistic period. The Romans were a little more liberal, and they made ways that a woman could hold property, and that a woman could... With the Greeks, if you were a woman and your husband died, your next of kin would come to your estate. In Rome, the Romans made it a little easier for women to hold property and to function as divorcees and things like that. They were kind of like we are today, right? Not quite as extreme, but they were getting there. Where the Greeks, women were property. Women didn't hold property. It was a whole different world. And Christ understood that a man who put his wife away causes her, this is Matthew chapter 5, to commit adultery, meaning it was absolutely inevitable that she was going to go find another husband. She had to, because most women simply couldn't make a living on their own. They couldn't make it on their own. They became whores, or they found themselves another husband. And that's why Paul warned Timothy in his epistle the Christian assemblies were encouraged to take in and support widows, and that was necessary, that was a necessary Christian act at the time, because widows that didn't have children to help them out, which was often the case, that they were pretty much screwed. They had nobody else to turn to, and the Christian community should help those people out. Remember, this is before the days of Bolshevism, right? Of Social Security and all the things that we have now. Well, Paul told Timothy to only take in those who really are widows. And it was obvious that a lot of young women who had been put away by their husbands had claimed to be widows and really weren't. But they were claiming to be widows so that they could either seek the succor of the community or so that they could remarry again. Well, Paul basically said that these young women, in their wantonness, would go off and try to seduce the men of the assembly. And if you read the Christogenia New Testament, and they should basically seek to marry and seek a man is what they should do. And that would, even though it's a single act of adultery because they're not really widows, but we have to look at things from a practical standpoint and understand that the law, we could never uphold the law as a society. We in this world, we have never upheld the law. The law is our ideal. We should seek to uphold it. But when we don't, that doesn't mean that we let our kinswomen and our kinsmen go childless or go hungry or starve and die. We can't do, is that brotherly? Is that Christian? That's not brotherly. I would have to say that's not Christian. We need children. We need to understand that we should be obeying the law. But there are going to be times when we're all going to fail. That is why we have to look to the mercy of Christ and the mercy of our God, because we can't. No man will be found righteous under the law. That's a clear statement of Scripture. I've elucidated that for 2 weeks now through Romans and Galatians. and James and John and Peter. Paul in Romans chapter 7 explains that when the wife dies, when the husband dies, that the wife is discharged from the law of the husband. And I use many supporting scriptures to show that we are discharged from the old covenant law. However, those moral commandments, what we are to hold as an ideal, and we should seek to do our best to seek to follow them, but we're all going to fail at times. And that's part of the lesson of this life, that nobody's perfect but God, but that God knows our hearts. Yahweh knows our hearts. Yahweh knows the walk we've walked. When a 30-year-old woman who's not a virgin ends up in the house of a 40-year-old man as his wife, and hopefully they'll have more white children, well, Yahweh knows the walk that caused that relationship to happen, and we don't. We don't know. We can't judge righteously because we didn't have to walk their walk. Well, we didn't have to be in their circumstance. So why do you judge your brother? And that's that's the question that the scripture poses. That's why we can't really judge each other, because we're always going to have our own personal biases, and we're always not going to know the facts. However, and the example for this is very striking in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, when somebody is doing harm to the other members of our community, they must be put out of the community, there's no doubt. But a man who has taken a 30-year-old woman to wife who hasn't seen her real husband in 10 or 15 years or whatever, he's not doing the members of the community any real harm. He's actually probably doing them a favor. That's the pragmatic view of the law of adultery. Yes, it's wrong, but forgiveness for one's brethren and love for one's brethren comes first. Okay, if and anybody wants to discuss this topic or any other topic, hopefully I've completely summarized my viewpoint and what I've spoke about for the last 3 weeks on the Monday night program. And if we don't want to talk about that, we could talk about anything else, right? This is an open forum, and welcome to the Christogenic Euro Forum. Hello. Hello, Matthew.
Yeah, hello. Good evening, everybody. I'm back again. Back to life.
Well, it's good to see you back. How's everything?
Well, I'm quite fine after all the traveling and the clearing up here. And I'm very, very busy in getting the house ready for the conference in August. And it's still a month to go, just over a month. I'm quite fine and it looks good. So we will have the conference in a proper way. Okay, that's what I can say at the first.
Wonderful. How many people do you expect?
A bit later, because at least 10 is clear. And I can go up to 20. That's my limit, because and then it's full. And you can't crowd it out with more people than they have to stand on the balcony. Pretty poor situation.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, that's about how many people you said last year.
Yeah, that's right. We had them in England. We had 14, 15 or so. And that's about what we can do. That's no problem. Chris is gone. He had a meeting, the poor soul. I knew it, and I see that.
Finally, can
Suffix Man West already?
He is gone. Yeah, that's right. He had to go to a meeting. Maybe he's coming back.
Well, I don't know why they came, but that's okay.
Yeah.
June left already. Sussex Man left already. Oh, well. It's I was going to talk about Eli's apparent, readily apparent universalism, and I have a forum post on it on Christogenia, and I talked about that for a little bit on Monday, but when I saw that Sussex Man and June had showed up, I decided not to mention it.
Excuse me.
In the sake of peace, but.
Yeah, peace is always best.
well, it has to be manifested. It just has to be. That's the way it is. I mean, sin has to be manifest.
Yep.
And to me, universalism is certainly sin. And I'll put the link to my forum post, which is basically reflects my remarks of last Monday. I'll put the link in the chat room here, so that if people want to see what I'm talking about, they're welcome to do that. And there's a link to the latest New Ensign magazine. I don't have to accuse Eli of universalism because he states it himself. I mean, he'll take everything but the label. He denies the label, but it's basically his position is the same one that on the Bible is the same position that the Jesuit Catholics have. I don't see a difference.
I think he's just in it for the money, then, huh?
Well, it's that wide tent and not wanting people to be uncomfortable or maybe wanting to squeeze himself into the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
Who knows? I can't guess his... Yahweh won't be mocked. I can't guess his motives. I'm sure there's a reason for it.
Yeah, that's sure was a big turnaround there. But maybe he felt like this all the time.
Well, I think he felt like it all the time. But, you know, in program after program that we did together through Paul and John and Matthew and Two Seed Line and Isaiah and Ezekiel and Jeremiah. Well, we got partway through Jeremiah anyway. All these programs we did together, all this ground we covered, I always vociferated my positions. And he never argued with me on these points.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, we may have had our little differences here and there about the origin of the other races. That's fine. But now all of a sudden he wants to save them, too. And that's why Clifton, Eli is proving Clifton to be right. Clifton's position has always been, and I've always seen where Clifton was coming from, even though I never really vociferated it myself. Clifton's position has always been that the idea of God's creating the other races leads to universalism. And it does. And Eli is a perfect example of that. Because in the New Ensign magazine this month, in Eli's first article, which is his editorial. In the editorial, he explains that salvation is the preservation of the race in this life, and to a great degree, he's correct. But then in his second article, which is the Beast of the Field Part 5, Eli says that the Mexicans and the Africans and the Chinese, that they're all going to go back to where they came from. And that means that they're going to be preserved in this life, right? I mean, that's what that means, right?
Mm.
So that means that Eli's position is that salvation is for everybody, even if he's denying it. He might be denying it. He's not even denying it. He's just talking out of both sides of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
If salvation is preservation in this life, and then you're going to say that all these other races are going to be preserved in this life, that means that salvation is for the other races. So what good is the promise to Israel?
Right.
Yeah, you see what I mean? That's if A equals B and C equals B, then A has to equal C. And Eli might be rejecting the label universalist, but damn well, that's what he is.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And I gave, I did a program several months ago on my Monday Night Forum, 8 witnesses against universalism, all in the New Testament. And Eli just dismisses them as eschatological interpretation.
I can't even hardly pronounce that name, that word.
What about that scripture about burying the dead for 7 months?
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty clear. It's they're not going back to where they came from.
What about plant that I have not planted? Every tree I have not planted?
Well, that falls under the category of eschatological interpretation. On my Matthew program a couple of weeks ago, I said the parable of the net, it talks about the net being dipped into the sea and gathering from every race, not just Jews and Christians. It says from every race. I can't be ashamed of the gospel of Christ. I can't be. And that's what it says, and it is what it says. And if I love him, then I have to accept and repeat what it says. And I can't soft soak, I can't soft pedal it because I'm afraid of offending somebody. That's just crazy. I don't give a damn who I offend.
Yeah,
that should be pretty evident by now, huh?
Too late in the game now.
Sure.
I'm worried about hurting people's feelings.
Do you think that stance I've taken doing away with comes from the Book of Ezra?
I'm sorry, Dorcas, I can't quite. You cut out a little.
I don't know why, but the Book of Ezra, they had to put away their wives and children.
Yes.
Do you think that's what their reasoning? That they hadn't taken the New Testament into account.
All the strangers, they had to get rid of their strange wives and their children. Strange.
Well, right, and even in the New Testament, that's clearly manifest that we should eliminate the aliens. They don't fall into fall into our communion.
No, that's right. They were alien, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was Nehemiah also, the Book of Nehemiah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were... Yeah, you know, some of those people may have been of Adamic stock, but it's pretty clear that a lot of those people were Canaanites and Edomites.
Yeah, sure.
And I believe that's why the Pharisees started. Yeah, you know, the word Pharisee means separatist.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that they probably began for the right reasons. As racial separatists, keeping their own stock separated from the other peoples around them, whether they were white or not. But just like we've seen the conservative movement here in America get poisoned with neocons and Jewish integrationists, well, guess what happened to the Pharisees? That's the way I see it. But I can't prove that from history, right? But just from the meaning of the word and some of the prevalent attitudes expressed by Josephus at the time, that's the way I see it.
Hmm.
That they probably started... Because the Pharisees started, the sect of the Pharisees started just before the absorption of the Edomites by Judea, according to Josephus.
No, yeah. Okay.
So it seems to me that the political climate of the time probably necessitated the sect of the Pharisees. Because you don't see separatists, political separatists, or religious separatists in homogenous lands. Now, I mean, there were no separatists in Iceland, right, until these last 10 years when Iceland started giving, started having immigration, right? And Sweden and Denmark, they never needed separatists. Yeah, you know what I mean? And that's what I think, that's how I think the Pharisees also arose.
Yeah, and then you have the, and I believe that in the Sadducees, when they, when all these Canaanites came into power, then they separated themselves as they do and had their own little clique.
Well, the Sadducees were actually, I believe they were Edomites because they rejected all, everything spiritual.
Right.
It is rejected by the Sadducees. And also, in Josephus's words, the Sadducees were the party of the rich.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And we know who has all the cash. Nowadays.
Well, they had it then, too.
But, I mean, it's just like today, it's just like then. It just doesn't, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. Nothing changes. It's the same old, technique, same old theory, same old program that they did before. They're doing it today.
No doubt.
But
yeah.
When you read, like we brought up there about Numbers and how Yahweh instructed his people and the priests and everything to separate themselves from these people and remove them out of your land. And from what I understand, is say if you were a man and you married a non-white person and you had mulatto children, you had to leave. That was it. You go raise them. Either run them out, send them away, or you have to leave with them. That's the way I understood it.
Well, that's the way it should be in an ideal world, but this isn't an ideal world.
No, I'm just saying, back then, that was their choice.
Denmark having lots of problems. You never hear it on the news. World News in the night gave out this information that the Danes are having great trouble with immigration. And what they're doing, they're going over to Malmo in Sweden, where there's a way they can walk across. And they come back into Denmark to go to work, to get away from the immigrants. So we never hear what's happening in all these different countries where they're being overrun with immigrants.
Denmark's just reimposed its immigration boundaries again, and it's insisting on passports. Now, Denmark is part of Schengen, so it's not supposed to do that. And Poland is up in arms because of what Denmark's doing. So it's quite interesting that the Danes are actually showing some backbone now.
Mm-hmm.
This is unusual in the European Union, but then so many things are happening there at the moment. Today, I noticed that one of our universities has been fined something like £56,000 by the EU for not showing the Euro flag.
Wow. Crazy.
Where? In England? Or in
Britain, University of Northampton. It was fined £56,000 for not showing the Euro logo, which is the Euro flag, on its notice board because they'd received some funding from the European Union Committee of the Regions. But what they forget is that whenever we receive funding from the EU, we have to meet that funding with our funding. So, you know, it's not just the Euro flag that should be. But another a museum, a People's History Museum in Manchester today was also fined £7,000. You know, this is a lot of money for people.
And hope.
And it just shows the tyrannical nature of the beast under which we are now living. Yeah.
Well, it all goes back to that video with Barbara Spector and Anita Cohen. You know,
Europe
will be multicultural.
Oh, yeah.
And that picture there I saw of all the Muslims in the streets of Paris there, praying and blocking the streets, and then they have their own Muslim security forces that so the cops can't get in to break it up, and people can't get in their homes. And well, we're getting it rubbed in our faces now.
Yeah, but it's more than that. It's actually a peacetime invasion, isn't it?
Yes.
The numbers and the concentration of these people and the insistence on their own Sharia law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless a nation is committing suicide, which we appear to be, don't allow foreigners to come in and then introduce their own Sharia law.
In County Hall in London, they've got special prayer rooms for Muslims.
Well, you know, when America was being settled in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, there were huge debates over immigration, and the English and German stock that were here, that they really feared a lot of them. The admittance of all these Eastern and Southern Europeans. Mm-hmm. And if you go back to Benjamin Franklin's time, a lot of the Englishmen weren't even thrilled about the Germans. So, if you go back and research the 1900s, the early 1900s, 1910s, 1920s, there were some great immigration debates. They didn't want to let Italians, Czechs, especially Sicilians, Hungarians, Poles, a lot of people didn't want to let them into the country. It changed. Yeah, you know, even though most Czechs are as white as most Germans and most Poles are as white as, a lot of Poles, let me put it that way, are as white as most Germans, it's that they still have a different custom and spirit about them, right? And they're always going to be, that even in a white nation, that they're always going to be a voting bloc with their own interests. And that's going to cause the fabric of the nation to change, and it's going to allow the Jew and his media to pit one group against another. But eventually, because the Poles and the Czechs and the Hungarians were related kindred groups, right? And second, they already had Christian values for the most part, as much as any German does or Englishman, that they already had an understanding of morality that Negroes and Latinos will never have. And Asians will never have, because they're an entirely alien spirit altogether. But our people have been tricked into this idea of assimilation. Well, yeah, a Polish family can assimilate into a German village, and in 3 or 4 generations, you probably won't know they were Polish. And they're just as white, so there's really not a problem. But these aliens from other races that come into our nations, we're being tricked into, you know, saying that the media saying, oh, they'll assimilate and they'll become like us. Well, that's never going to happen. It can't happen. And the aliens don't want it to happen. That when you see a Muslim community in France, that's not any group trying to assimilate. That's a colony. But when you see a Chinatown in the United States, they're not trying to assimilate. That's a colony. They're trying to create a launching point so that they could subsume and gather more property to themselves and grow in size. It's an invasion. It's not an assimilation. They're never going to assimilate.
See, it used to be, Bill, that you were chosen to come into this country. You didn't decide yourself, I'm just going to walk in and be an American. You were chosen. You had to go through Ellis Island, and you had to
be sponsored, right?
You had to be sponsored, and you had to have, I mean, you had to be chosen. You had to be qualified in the laws of the Constitution, speaking English, writing English, talking English, writing, speaking English, reading English.
Thinking English.
But my great grandparents that came from Cork, They had to go through to Ellis Island. They had to, if you were chosen to come here, they, you know, they only wanted the best from any country to come here. Those countries that they were accepting immigration from. So even if you were English or you were German, whatever, you had to be a good character and good health, and that's why they wouldn't let you come right in. Now in California, the Mexicans come in, they stand right there on the corners waiting for you to pick them up to take them to go to work. Yeah. Immigrants, illegals right over the border, they just stand all over the place by Home Depot and all that. There's no problem. But one white man that's from Ireland that's gone 3 days over his immigration status or his stay, oh boy, they got the army out looking for him. Yeah, it's a bad situation.
Yes, it's incredible.
So,
you know, it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah. They don't assimilate. Like, you were right, Bill, about that. I never thought about that. I was just looking on your website there, your videos, and just talking about when you were in Philadelphia and also about the Chinese situation, problem that's gathering in America, all these Chinatowns all over. You know, they're supposed to stimulate into our society. There shouldn't be any Chinatown or Thai town or any of this kind of stuff. Of course, it's okay to have Germantown and everything like that, but that's all right.
Well, Germantown was named Germantown when it was a group of Germans surrounded by Englishmen, right?
I couldn't think of any other names. He thought, well, we're all Germans, we'll just name it German. No,
well, after a few generations, you couldn't tell they were German, right? Unless you knew their last names or asked them.
But no,
and that's never going to happen with the Chinese.
No, they don't even want to learn English or nothing, just like like the Mexicans and all that. They don't want to assimilate.
No, they're here to loot and to pillage, and that's right. The only reasons why they're here. It's very clear that they're an invading army. Well, Clifton, I'm not really ready to discuss it yet, and let me, I'm across the room right now, let me get to my email. Clifton sent me an article that I hope to post this weekend, maybe even tonight. I'm going to get yelled at because the Saxon Messenger is definitely going to be late this month. I'm going to try to have it ready to have my Philadelphia article ready by Tuesday at the latest is what I'm shooting for. But I was tied up with doing labor for money all this week, so... which is a necessity sometimes, right? Well, we just have to do it. There.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, my father would have bought that McDonald's hamburger back in the 1960s. We wouldn't have to worry about working and all that now. I blame it on my dad. Could have bought a McDonald's hamburger at a restaurant. Oh, never forget them.
Clinton sent me an article, Stealth Invasion, Red Chinese Operations in North America, and asked that I post it on his website. And he said he couldn't find this article anywhere online, but he scanned it out of a booklet he found, and he OCR'd it. And the Clifton notes on it, note this article authored and circulated by Richard A. Delgadio and Dr. Roger Canfield with no telephone numbers given. They have an address in Fairfax, Virginia. Is being scanned and reformatted in preparation for the internet for three very good reasons. One, this article overlaps in content an article I had written in 1995 entitled The Problems of Ezekiel 38 and 39, the prophetic attack of Russia on the United States. In that article, I included China along with Russia, and I had no knowledge, nor did I personally know that Richard Delgadio and Roger Canfield existed. Clifton was actually struck by what they're saying here about China using Costco, and this Clifton, when we were talking about Costco on an open forum or on this chat server on an unrecorded night, I forget which it is, but we were talking about Costco, China Overseas Shipping Corporation, and Clifton went to research Costco, and he found this article, and it's basically, well, Clifton was struck by it because it's spelling out, you know, that Costco is a China horse for Red China, and that they've used it to infiltrate America, it's pretty much spelled out in this article, and hopefully I will have this on Clifton's website within the next 48 hours, and I'll also have a link to that article on the front page of Christadelphia.
So it's owned by China?
Yes. Well, Costco is owned by China, yes, Chinese Overseas Shipping Company. It's actually owned mostly by the Red Chinese Army, right? What Americans don't understand is that most Chinese corporations are basically owned by the People's Republic Army of China.
Yeah, they have their main port, Bill, is right there in Southern California, the old Navy base. That's all Costco.
No. Well, I've known for 20 years that the Chinese Army owns most Chinese corporations, or they own a large percentage of most Chinese corporations. Let's put it that way. That's what Red China does, is they put their corporations under their army. And I've known that for 20 years, and long before I even got into identity, I knew that.
Yeah.
And I read that in mainstream sources. But most people just don't pay any damned attention.
Right.
They keep buying that crap because it's cheap. Well, they're feeding the Red Chinese Army, the people that are going to come over here and try to off them. Well, they are over here, and they're going to try to off them. There's no doubt.
Well, they got to get the credit card. They want money from the credit card, you know, so they're going to come over and collect it. But yeah, my dad told me that several years ago that Costco is Red China, owned by Red Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
They have the big shopping centers there where they sell in bulk, and it's all Chinese. American products that are made in China.
Didn't they sell the Panama Canal?
Well, no. What happened was under Jimmy Carter, we gave the Panama Canal back to Panama, and the Panamanians took it and gave China a long-term lease on it.
Oh.
That happened in the 1970s.
Now, that should be a violation of the Monroe Doctrine right there.
Absolutely. But who cares about Monroe? I mean, I went into the, and it's going to be a part of my Philadelphia articles, and the part that's not written yet. I went into the, with Bob from Pennsylvania. He's here quite often. I went into the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia, and there was nothing about the Constitution. And there was nothing about most presidents from Washington to Lincoln. There was nothing about Andrew Jackson, nothing about Madison, Monroe. You didn't see anything. And if you didn't know anything about American history, you would think that when you left the National Constitution Center that the American Revolution was fought to free Negro slaves. Mm-hmm. That's what you would think. That's what you would leave there thinking.
How shameful.
That's the way they package it, and I'll be writing again about that soon. In fact, that's the writing I have to do yet to get. I want the July Saxon Messenger issue to even though it's going to be late, I didn't get it out in time for July 4th. I want it to be about, you know, to have that Philadelphia theme, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm shooting for.
That. Well, you know, you got America with that Kenyan sitting there and his president sitting as thinks he's the president. You got a lot of white people, from what I've seen when I was over in the States there, that just gloat over the fact that they're, you know, that they weren't racist. They voted for Obama. and that somehow they figured that that made them good, and they weren't, you know, because the media putting anybody that was white and wasn't voting for Obama must be racist, you know.
Well, they're fooled by their churches into thinking that God wants to join all the races. So they think they're doing the right thing, so they look for their sense of righteousness in helping that process along.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's go ahead.
There's no doubt that Satan has the world deceived. And our people, with their own empathy, that they feel that they have to help this agenda along because it's God's agenda. Well, it's the agenda of the Jews' God. It's not the agenda of the God of the Bible.
Hmm.
And they haven't ever read their Bible.
Yeah. What another thing? What they created was this atmosphere of I'm in the clique now because I don't know how to explain it, but you know Obama's he's the one that's going to be president and you want to vote for the winner. They kind of do this with a lot of candidates, but with this Obama running, they did a heck of a job on creating this image that, you know, that if you really want to be cool, you want to be in the crowd, you want to vote for Obama. You know, with
Danny,
the young kids in it.
You've also got electronic voting machines.
Oh, yeah, you're right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the federal, what do you call it, the federal election.
You know, you can turn those machines whichever way you want to get the result you want.
Yeah. You know, that's a proven fact, too, because several years ago, I saw a gentleman who represented one of the software companies that they use for the electronic voting, and he did admit that it can be sabotaged.
Hmm.
That it can't be tampered with, it can't be sabotaged, they could do that. If someone could do that if they wanted to and make it look like that person, you know, that he won and make it look real.
They can't even come up with an operating system that doesn't have any flaws after how many years, you know? And then we trust them to put out a program that's going to tally our votes?
Yeah, I think it was, there's another thing that they do different now. It used to be the League of Women Voters that took care of the debates on TV. And then they changed that now to the Federal Election Committee or Commission. And basically you have to be a Republican or a Democrat to get in. And at that, they consider whether you're popular enough or they think that, like they did with Ron Paul, you know, they said, well, and also Patrick Buchanan said, well, he's not really doing well in that, you know, he's not doing well in the polls, so he's not really that important. These people, you know, they're chosen ones that they had. Well, this is who you want, you know, McCain and the other one, and Bush and them. But everybody else, you know, they don't matter because they're not really that popular, so we don't bother with them. That's what they do.
Well, that's the Jewish oversight.
Yeah. They took it out of the hands of actually within the people of the League of Women Voters, and they put it in the Federal Election Committee. I believe that's an official name, Federal Elections Committee. And basically, you've got to be in the clear or you're not. And you don't get on, so. Which is not fair. But nothing's fair now, so. Only if you have a Holocaust Museum. You got to have a Holocaust Museum. That's the only thing you got to do.
Well, I wanted to say hi to all my brothers and sisters there in Europe. It's good to see and hear from you guys again.
It's good to see you.
Right.
I not to change the subject too much, but I wanted to discuss the food and farming issue that we have going on over here. Is anyone here aware of what is called no-till farming?
Have a top layer. You just push it in. Push the dirt.
Right. Me and a few people here, I kind of, I mean, not that it was too tough to coin the phrase, but after really, I mean, I had heard of no-till farming a few years back. Never really paid too much attention to it, you know, because to me, I just kind of lumped it all in with the, you know, ConAgros and the Monsanto. I mean, it's all becoming commercial agriculture anyway. But here, it is far surpassed just being used in commercial agriculture. Bass player in my band has a farm that he leases about 60 acres of farming land to his cousins, and he was just discussing with me how next year he's not going to renew the lease with them because they have gone to no-till farming, where you don't dig up the ground. Essentially, you're planting hybrid seeds in the ground, and then every 2 weeks you get a special pesticide or some kind of chemical that you spray over that specific crop, and it kills everything except that specific crop. And you can see where, like, if you have a soybean field and a corn field adjoining each other, and you see overspray, like from the soybean field, it kills the corn crop. Or if you get overspray from the corn crop onto the soybean field, you see soybeans dead.
Yeah.
But that also what you're doing to the soil.
Yeah.
Exactly. But that seems to be the way of almost all farming around here. That I really started taking notice. Now I live in pretty close to Amish country, and the Amish they don't mess around with that no-till farming crap. But it seems like they're about the last ones who are farming the old-fashioned way, and it's
I don't think we've got it over here.
I never heard of that. No.
I mean, I'd heard of it in a more benign way, but this is going back 30 years, and this was in private gardens, but not using any sort of pesticides whatsoever.
That's right. The original topsoil was so deep they didn't have to till the ground; they would just push the seed in. That was how you farmed. Wonderful topsoil. So that's the true farming. That's how it should be done.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And a lot of people don't sow their seed until, whether it's a new moon or a full moon, when the moon is waxing, all that has been lost.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. I came across supposed to be a natural. I've tried it, and so far it worked pretty good. But for an insecticide, you take you crush up garlic and you let it sit in water overnight, and then. And then you strain the garlic out, and you use that as a spray on your plants or on your vegetables, and it keeps the bugs away.
Garlic's fine for that.
Yeah.
Right.
This is just the water that you're using off the. You just put it in your sprayer, and you use that. So I've been using that, and so far I've chased all the ants off the cherry trees, and it works. It seems like I don't know how the fruit's gonna. Well, I did harvest some strawberries, and it didn't bother the strawberries at all. So
okay. And the tomatoes?
I haven't got the tomatoes yet. They're still coming. They're just starting to.
Okay.
So, but I don't know. I'm thinking about just digging up the whole front yard there. Put a vegetable garden in.
Yeah, it's about the only way around here that you're actually going to get fresh you know, real vegetables. I mean, even, you know, you go to your local, your quote-unquote local markets, supermarkets and stuff, and most of the quote-unquote fresh fruits and vegetables that you buy in there pretty much come from China or out of the country.
It's absolutely or Mexico.
I want my produce grown in Mexico, and they're selling us a lot of fish that comes from China that I won't buy.
That's true.
You got to watch their onions and stuff that's coming up from Mexico, too, because a lot of them are using their own feces as fertilizer, and they have tuberculosis and all that stuff. When I was over there last March, they had a big breakout in some of the supermarkets there. What was it, Safeway or something? Where they traced these Mexican spring onions, and they were loaded with, they were just given with feces. They said it was, people were coming down with tuberculosis.
Imagine.
And getting food poisoning and all that kind of stuff.
Unbelievable.
Boy, what a price you got to pay for this multiculturalism.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to feel guilty because you say anything in favor of your own race. It's amazing how the Jews have really brainwashed us.
Brainwashed
our race in general. I mean, not us.
No. No doubt.
It's amazing. They're absolutely, we're like lemmings. They have us, you know. That, well, if you're not good, you know. You know, if you don't believe this way, that it's good jumping over that cliff. So you have to believe that.
And the next thing now is they're going to put cows, like the chickens in factories, have them indoors. You hardly see a cow now in fish.
Right.
They're all going to.
Really?
They're not going to go outside anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
So heartbreaking. Time words.
Yeah.
Wow.
They call it intensive farming, but they'll be all. They'll never go out of the sheds.
What a deceptive title. Intensive farming, huh?
Yeah. Telling me.
Wow.
Well, it's one argument for buying organic produce, because as long as you can, prove or establish its provenance, its true provenance, then the animals should be treated properly. And certainly around here, the cows are in the fields, because you see them going in the morning and the evening to be milked. Oh, geez. Mm-hmm. Well, down here, you hardly see any. They're doing it with sheep. You don't see any about.
Hmm.
Where are they?
Well,
same breed.
We're lucky here because, of course, you know, we have we're in a business where we have to have meat, you know, get meat and everything. But from the butcher where we get our meat and everything, the owner there, Harry, he took me out, what was it, a couple weeks ago, and said, "See that, Dan? See those cattle out there?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you'll be eating them in a couple months from now."
Yeah. There's beef off the hoof.
There you go. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
But, it's a small town, so that's, you kind of expect that, but.
Yeah. Right, you don't really find that. You don't really find that around here. There's we have one market, probably about 15 miles away from us. That they raise their own cattle. It's about the best meat that you'll be able to buy at a supermarket around here. But the problem with that is that there's so much government regulation involved now with raising cattle. You know, forcing you to inject them with all kinds of vaccines and all kinds of other crap, too.
Yeah.
That's why when you're eating chicken or turkey, not to eat the wings, because that's where they vaccinate them.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Well, not the dark eye. Our local butcher always killed his own cattle, and you always saw them grazing around the his shop and his abattoir. One day, a few years ago, because he has to have inspectors, one day 10 EU inspectors arrived, and his inspection charges have gone up from £200 a month that he could cope with to £2,000, and that closing down eventually. But, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back was when he got 10 inspectors in one day. And, of course, they're not allowed to tell you that they're coming. So you can imagine the sort of bureaucracy that is preventing good food getting onto the market. So now animals have to travel a very long distance to abattoirs, and that affects the quality of the meat, of course.
Well, part of what we're dealing with here in the States is that the government, for a long time, for at least the last 15 years up until the last 1 or 2 years, they subsidized our farmers to grow more corn than they knew what to do with. And that's how, you know, we started, because there was such a surplus of corn, the government then took all that corn surplus, developed stuff like high fructose corn syrup and your ethanol to add into your gasoline and all this stuff. Yeah. But what they've been doing with most of the corn is using it as feed for cows and various other animals that we eat that is not their natural food.
And it
causes, it's not like, pumping them full of chemicals causing defects and whatnot, but they're not growing right. You know, it's all extra fatty. It just it adds weight to them, but it doesn't do anything for the quality of the meat. But also, in addition to that, with, you know, I guess to keep from really having farmers inject too much stuff into their animals, they add it to the feed. And I came across an instance with a farmer friend of mine who told me a situation where, like, for your chicken feed, I mean, it's specialized. You have, like, 3 phases of chicken feed when they're feeding these commercial chickens that, you know, they end up growing. Most of them die before they're even harvested. Well, I shouldn't say most, but a lot die before they're even harvested because the body and their organs grow way too fast for their heart, and they have heart attacks because they're growing at abnormal rates. But this farmer told me about how I guess his brother had mistakenly taken the 3rd phase final growth chicken feed and decided to throw it to the cows, killed all the cows.
They were. That's incredible, but I don't doubt it for 1 minute.
So it's difficult to know what you're eating.
That this Judaized world was just evil. That there's no other explanation for it.
No.
It just makes no sense how anybody can look at that and say, that's good. You know, that's why in the first chapter of Genesis, you know, everything that Yahweh created, he said he created it, and it was good.
And that's why, and I hate to keep harping on the guy, but Eli would say that it's not the Manzer's fault, the Manzer didn't do anything, but the very existence of a hybrid is sin. The very existence of a hybrid is, as I drew the allusion on last Monday's program, blasphemy of the Holy Spirit. Because Yahweh, the Spirit, God said, kind after kind. And the hybrid is a violation of his first commandments.
Don't know about going into
It's nice to have empathy, but the word of God is sovereign.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. That's why you can't eat even these peculiar potato paprikas. But you can buy them. It's a mixture. So never buy it. Well, I'm not going to eat you. Yeah.
But must.
Well, I mean, I see no problem buying bags of mixed lettuce.
Yeah.
I don't think we have to eat things in segregation, but we sure as hell should grow them in segregation.
Yeah.
I told you about that show when I watched from Alaska a couple years ago over here. This gentleman was raising huskies. Alaskan huskies, just absolutely beautiful dogs, and some of them had the real blue eyes, and he was saying that, you know, the blue-eyed dogs were worth more money, and it was very important to keep, you know, to keep the breed and not the breed outside of the breed, because you have better dogs, you know, husky dogs when you keep in, you know, breeding with their own huskies. And then his Alaskan wife came up with a little half-breed kid.
Wow.
You would think that guy would know something about breeding.
Yeah.
You know, breeding dogs, and there he comes a little, this is an Eskimo woman.
Right, I had to say something to him right then and there about that.
I mean, it was just, I told my wife, look at that, this guy's raising these dogs, and then he's got an Eskimo wife, a little half-breed kid, just...
No. Does that kid have one blue eye and one brown eye there?
I don't know, but, you know, I'm not trying to be facetious or anything like that, but when I was in Alaska, I was around some of those, you could always tell when you were around those Eskimos because they, you know, and I'm not trying to be a bad guy here, but they absolutely smell so bad. They have a reeking odor of the, like fish or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
and oil.
It's really, I mean, if you've never been around them, you know, I mean, if you come around them, you'll know when you're around you, you can smell them.
Well, Negroes have that really pungent odor also. I can't stomach it.
I'm just telling you, you know, I just, my brother-in-law told me, he says, you'll know if you're around and you have this certain smell, like a smell of blubber or a whale or fish. He said, that's an Eskimo's coming around you.
Well, all I know is Heidi Klum, she must have blown her sense of smell out of her head with cocaine or something.
Yeah. But, I couldn't believe this guy with the huskies, you know. He had a husky dog. He went on for about 10 minutes about the breed and how special this breed is. And you know, you keep the blood good, the dogs will be bigger and stronger, and they'll be able to pull the sleds.
Well, the hypocrisy is incredible, isn't it?
I've seen it all. But I kick out of that one. So. But no, they're really going to town now with this race mixing thing. It's
more black feet.
Yeah, you notice that? You see a lot of more of these little happy babies everywhere.
No.
And
it's
really
end time.
They're very they grow up to be very angry too because they get it from both sides. And they grow up on that too. Plus, their genetic order—their genetic makeup is out of order. I'm no specialist on genes, but from what I understand, that they're not very they're not at a calm sense as in a more pure blood person. That whenever there's a mixture of genetic code, it causes different problems. Like, for instance, you notice a lot of those blacks, They're high, what they call high yellows, and they got those black spots all over them. You know, and the pigmentation is just, it's out of order because of, you know, the genetic code has been hampered with, and it doesn't have a pattern to fall into, and it, and then this is what happens. You know, you have these streaks, like what we call a streak or whatever.
Yeah, the test would be kind after it's kind.
Yeah. And then I'd have to go get myself a wig that looked like old Whitey. Yeah, those old black girls, they knew all, they know all about those wigs. They want to look like Whitey. They hate Whitey, but they sure like to look like us.
Yeah, there's a half breed from the area in which we live in here. I mean, there's plenty of them, but the one that we know personally, yeah, nice enough girl and all, but she tends to have medical issues, and apparently her mom is a lot the same way. And not that it's funny, but I mean, it was just amazing to hear that this kind of admission from, you know, a mixed breed, a mongrel. She's like, you know, she said it plain and simple. She says, I have bad genes.
Yeah.
Does.
Yeah.
They're out of order.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, video that was circulating around with Cassius Clay or Muhammad Ali talking to, who was that girls that, what's that guy's name, that British announcer, how can I forget his name, he's very popular, but he was interviewing Muhammad Ali there, and Muhammad Ali said, why would a white woman ever want to, or a white person ever want to mix with a black person and have children? Why would you ever want to do that? He was right.
Yep.
It was Michael Parkinson.
There you go.
Really?
And he's trying to stick up for race mixing.
Yes, he was.
And Clay was telling him, why would you want to do that? You know, why would you want to do that? Do something like that.
Yeah, it's crazy enough. They do.
But, yeah. You know, in order to make it in the business, you got to go along with it.
Yeah.
So, you want to sell your soul to the devil.
Yeah, you really do.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Look at all those girls that they got in Hollywood there that you think that they were white women, and they turn out to be Jewesses.
Yeah.
They speak Hebrew and the whole works. Yeah. But they look, a lot of them look very Aryan, but you find out that they're, you know, they're Jewish blood.
It's like, I remember way back in the day, catching a part of an Oprah show, not that I watched Oprah, I think maybe that was my mother or somebody like that. But anyway, I remember seeing Madonna on there, and the only thing that really sticks out in my mind was that she was talking about following the Kabbalah.
Yeah.
Then I had no idea what it was, and that actually precipitated me to start doing a little bit of research into that. And then basically what I had come up with at that time, it was like, basically, I guess the Kabbalah is considered like the Jewish book of black magic.
Well, yes, so, it is, but that's it's more than that, but it's also a big fad in Hollywood the last 10 years.
Uh-huh. Make it look like
the outward appearance of piety, right? But inwardly, they're just practicing ancient Babylonian witchcraft.
Canaanite
rituals.
Yes, that's all it is.
Yeah.
And it goes all the way back to the satanic days and the Canaanites. All that stuff that Yahweh said not to have in your land, and you don't have these people right. on your land, you won't have these problems. And but you know, that's another law that we suffer from. And boy, we suffer from it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So what else do we have today? What else is going on? Nobody has any questions about my discourses on the law and Israel and marriage? And I was hoping to stimulate some conversation about that, right? I guess not. That's okay.
I think we all agree with you, Bill.
Okay. Yeah. Then I'm probably screwing up. No, I'm kidding.
Well, also, I believe that adultery falls under race mixing, too.
Well, yes, adultery does, is,
cheat on your wife, or your wife cheats on you. I think it's race mixing also.
Right, right. In the Old Testament, adultery is race mixing, and that's what the word meant. And when they came to, well, that's what the Hebrew word meant, and that's what the commandment meant, because, I mean, there was already a commandment about coveting thy neighbor's wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, the, in the New Testament, the New Testament speakers and writers basically followed the Septuagint. I mean, that could be well established in their use of the Greek language. Mm-hmm. And that could be well established from the quotes and from the discourses that they had where they used words as they were translated in the Septuagint. And in the Greek culture, the word moikos does come from a verb, megnumi, which means to mix. There's no doubt. Mm. And that's why the Septuagint translators, who were Hebrews, chose that Greek word to render the Hebrew word for adultery. There's no doubt. Right. But it's fully evident from reading the classics that that's just not how the Greeks use the word. Okay? The Greeks use the word in the sense of general confusion of the seed line. In other words, if your wife is sleeping with your brother or the next-door neighbor, you're really not going to know whose son it is the next time she gets pregnant, right?
Right.
So that's the sense that the Greeks use that word. They use that word in the sense of any kind of confusion of the racial family lines, right? And confusion because you're mixing not only outside but inside also, right? And they really didn't believe in mixing outside at all, so it really meant any kind of confusion of the bloodlines is what it meant. Now that's why in Acts chapter 15 the apostles forbade fornication in addition to the Ten Commandments, right? Because in the Greek mind, race mixing was one of the forms of fornication. And we see that's how Jude defines the word as the pursuit of strange flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that's why Paul chose that word to describe what was going on between the sons of Israel and the daughters of Moab, right, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. So fornication is, really fornication isn't limited to race mixing. It's any kind of illicit sex. Sex with a dog is fornication. Sex with a Negro is fornication. And sex with another man is that they had another word for that, arsenokoitēs, but that's also, any form of illicit sex is fornication. But to the Greeks, race mixing was one of those forms of illicit sex.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two places in the Bible to go to see that very clearly, right? 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 8, I think it is, and Jude 7. Well, so that's why the apostles made that addition, so that the Greeks would understand what the commandment not to commit adultery really meant, right? But I didn't even go there with my discourse because Christ used the word adultery in the parables and in his commandments clearly as sex with somebody other than your wife or your husband, and we look at the Old Testament and the ideal law of God, we see that your first sexual partner should be, and even Paul, elucidates this in 1 Corinthians 7, your real wife and your husband should be your first sexual partner and vice versa. It's just that we don't live, and even though we should live up to the ideal whenever we can, we don't live in an ideal world. That's just the way it is. Yeah. We're never going to live in an ideal world, not until Yahshua returns.
What's everybody think about the marriage ceremony itself?
Well, it's it's nonsense because people confuse that with the marriage, right?
No, I mean the ceremony itself.
Well, that's what I said. It's nonsense because people confuse it with marriage. It's become nonsense. It's only a confirmation of the allegiance that a wife should have to a husband and vice versa. That's what it's only supposed to be. That's why it's called an exchange of vows. It's a formalizing of your exchange of vows. But people have come in their minds, because of the false teachings of the church, to confuse that with marriage, when marriage is really that sexual act between a man and a woman.
Yes.
That's marriage.
And there are different ceremonies, aren't there? There isn't just one.
But then, well...
Well, I kind of look at it as like a funeral wake. It's more for having witnesses to verify that yes, these two people have joined in a union. Much like the funeral wake. I mean, while today it may seem a little bit morbid to be looking at a dead body, there was a purpose in that earlier in our history where it was verification of who it was that was dead, and having the family members verify that, yes, this is a member of our family, and yes, he certainly looks dead.
Well, the idea of a wake in Ireland was that, and Britain, what was that, when you found somebody laying prostrate and unconscious, you brought them home and put them up on a table to see if they'd wake.
Yeah.
That's why they called it a wake.
I didn't know that one.
Oh, yeah.
But also after that, when they actually got into, when they were buried and put into the ceremony, they did tie some string around their toe and a bell above. And that's where we get the term dead ringers from.
Yeah, yes, that is where we get the term from.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Right, I was going to mention that.
Well, the idea of a wake was supposed to eliminate the possibility of dead ringers, right?
Yeah.
It might just be a drunken stupor you fell into and you're in a coma or something.
Yeah.
In Ireland, that's very likely to happen.
I was coming home a couple of weeks ago, and I was dropping a friend off. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and driving there, I caught something out of the side of my eye there, and there was a little hill there, and there was a guy, and he was kind of sloped over, moving a little bit, and it was kind of cold out, and I thought, I dropped my friend off, and I was saying, maybe I better go back and see if that guy's okay and everything. Well, anyway, I went back again, and there he slid down the hill. He was trying to get up the hill to go home, and he was pretty, he had a lot to drink. And I got him up and got him into the car and everything. And there he wanted to go back to the bar again. He didn't want to stop. I said, you can't walk too much right now. I mean, look, you don't mind if I can borrow a fiver off you, dude, and take me back over to the hill. So, I don't know. I dropped him off up there. But he was just pretty much
Well, the vow exchange is good. It's nice. It helps reaffirm the relationship, and if it's used for the right reasons, it's healthy. But when we see that as the marriage, that's not healthy, because it gives people the idea that they could go have all the sex they want, and they're not cheating on their wife or their husband because they're not married. But when indeed they're just getting married many times over, right?
Well, another thing too is we have, we do have traditions in our countries. And from what I understand, what I've always learned and was taught and as tradition, that you got married, you said you had the ceremony of marriage, and of course two people were supposed to be virgins, and then you had the sexual act after you tied the knot, as they say.
Well, right, but that sexual act is the real wedding, right? And that's what people lose. And when you've performed a sexual act and haven't had the wedding, well, that doesn't mean that you're not married. That just means that that you've performed a sexual act without having undergone the ceremony of the vow exchange.
Yeah.
And the vow exchange is only the formality. That the sexual act is the marriage.
Yeah. But you're not supposed to tell your daughters that, Bill. That's the thing.
well, you should tell your daughters that so that they know.
Yeah.
The first time that they lay in bed and hand themselves over to some joker, it's that they're married.
Yeah.
You should tell your daughters that so that they want to get married right. Now, that's the damn shame in our society is that we've let the Jew redefine it. The Jew has redefined all of our concepts and ideas through the power of the media and the television. And we've let him do it because we've bought into it.
Yeah, the trouble is even nowadays, I remember when I was younger, my mother telling my daughter, or my sisters and stuff about, you know, you can't have sex after you get married, you know, and to stay virgins and everything. And nowadays, they just, it's like, get the girls out there having. When are you going to get out there and have some sex? You're already 12 years old.
Even telling your daughter that you can't have sex until you get married is basically allowing the Jew to redefine our culture.
Yeah.
You have to tell your daughter that when you have sex, that's when you get married.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's the way it should be, but that's not the way it is now, the way they...
Right, but we can't... Kids. Well, you see, we have to raise up our children in the right way, and that's what we have to start doing, or the Jew's going to keep winning. I mean, of course, we know the Jew's not going to win, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to do the right thing.
This concept of... you know, you're married when you take the vow or you go to the ceremony or whatever. That's like writing up a contract between you and somebody else and then basically having everybody assume that you're both under that contract even though you didn't sign it yet.
Well, I think the wedding, the white dress and the veil, they're all biblical. Based, I think that's what is meant by that. The marriage to Christ. I mean, that was the portrayal, and they're acting out that marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how is it then that Jacob was deceived? If she was veiled, although they. I'm saying that, but I'm not sure whether they had the ceremony like that.
You know, they didn't have a ceremony. I did an exposition on Genesis, I think it was chapter 29 a few weeks ago. If you read it, the men had a party, the men had a feast, and Leah was brought to Jacob's chamber that night by Laban.
Yeah.
That's the way the text reads. And when you understand it, this is the world before electricity. well, then it's easy to be deceived. I don't know. If I was a young man and I was alone in the dark anticipating this beautiful woman that I loved, I may have screwed up if Laban brought me a horse. Damn it. I'm just joking. But, yeah, it's easy at that point to... Not pay too much attention to exactly who it is that you've been brought, right? It's a hot, sweet, young, tender thing, and you're just going to tear into it. You're not going to care who it is. I'm just being pragmatic.
Well,
depends on who her mother is, too.
Well, if you look at the setting, the historical setting, it's rather easy for... Laban at that point to pass Leah off as Rachel, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah, it's just nowadays, you know, nothing's taught like that. It just seems like...
No.
Well, right, but that's why we should want to do the right thing and define the terms appropriately as they are scriptural and teach our children to do better than what we've done.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's why, you know, a lot of people, and this is where this argument with these circus clowns, Maui Patricia and Jeff Westover and Dan Kersey started, was when I said that if you're with a woman and you learn the truth, well, you don't put the woman away. You made a commitment to her. You keep her. And that's the point of contention. We agree about everything else, but they want to teach that you should put that woman away and never have sex with her again because the relationship started, outside of the law. But that's not the right thing to do at all. The right thing to do is to keep the commitment that you have and to have children and raise them up righteously, knowing that sex is marriage, being told that when you do this, you're marrying this man or this woman, and in the eyes of God, so you better be right and serious and committed to what you're doing. And that would make for a much better foundation in our society and for the idea of marriage.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know, we've all been screw-ups because we've all been taught wrong.
I have no guidance.
Well, right. I mean, sex outside of marriage. There's no such thing in the first place. Why the hell is the Jew selling that bullshit? Why does he get away with that? Because people are ignorant. Sex, you can't have sex outside of marriage. It's not possible in the eyes of God. Yeah. If you have sex, you're getting married.
You're married.
They called it fornication.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
If you were already married, it's adultery, and it basically can be called fornication because it's a form of what we would consider to be illicit sex.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if you're not married and you're having sex, well, you're married now.
Yeah. Yeah, that should scare them.
Well, that's the truth, and that's what our kids have to be told. But we can't let the Jews define our terms. And that's where we lose every time. And even a lot of people in identity, even though they think they got it and they're trying to do the right thing and do it the right way, that their own minds still have Jewish definitions associated with a lot of words.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Pumpkin to all of us.
Well, yeah, it is all of us. I've done it myself. It's something that we have to learn to break ourselves from. It's very difficult. I mean, there's a lot of words, right? There's a lot of terms. There's a whole way of thinking that has to be eliminated to conform to the word of God.
Yeah.
And when we speak, quite often we don't, you know, you might use a word that you have one thought in your mind, and when I hear it, it evokes a different thought in my mind. And I'm agreeing with you, but I really wouldn't agree with you, or vice versa, if I knew the thought in your mind that word evoked was different from the thought it evokes in my mind.
Yeah.
So it's you know, we really have to sit down and but when we hear something we disagree with, well, we have to sit down and think about what the speaker is really saying, right?
Yeah, that's usually the best.
and that's why, to bring Eli up as an example again, that's why a lot of people get offended at me when I call Eli a universalist. Because Eli will say, I'm not a universalist. He'll tell those same people, I'm not a universalist. And I'll call him a universalist, and they'll think that I'm being unjust. But when you listen to Eli, and it's evident in this new Ensign magazine, when you see his position on what salvation is, and then you see his position that the other races are going to be preserved, well, that fits his definition of salvation perfectly, which is why I call him a universalist. And then Eli will say, I'm not a universalist. You see what I mean? But if you don't take the time to look at his position on salvation and take the time to look at his position on eschatology, you'll never see that he's a universalist. So it's not my fault that you don't see it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's it's the definition of terms and what they evoke, the thoughts that they evoke in each of our minds, that we should all try to conform to the Word of God and see how those terms are used in the Bible, and marriage is an important one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so.
Food is another one. Mm-hmm. Food. A lot of people think pork is food because people eat it today. Well, pork was not food in the first century. So when Paul said you could eat all foods, he wasn't including pork in that statement, right? And that's another good example. Pork is not food. Once we get to the biblical idea that pork is not food, then there's no more argument over whether or not we could eat pork.
Yeah.
And that's a more clear idea. That's an easier idea to see, I think.
Yeah, still too many people are still eating pork. Oh.
Well, in Germany, it's a principal food, right? The pork, you know, before I went to prison in New Jersey, the beef section was always twice as big as the pork section in the supermarket. And today, exactly the opposite is true.
Yeah.
The pork. When I go to the markets here upstate, the pork section is twice the size of the beef section.
Mm. Yeah, and it's cheap indeed, and that's why
it's cheap.
You're buying it. Yeah, but I'll keep it off. I don't need it. Yeah. There's much better food and much better meat to eat.
Yeah.
Organic pork now.
Organic pork, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that an oxymoron?
And the other thing is, in the fields around here, the pigs are running around the fields with their little huts, and they're free-range organic. No cows or sheep.
Yeah,
free-range pigs. I thought all the free-range pigs were in the cities.
So the cows are not free-range cows, or the lamb or the sheep aren't, but the pigs are free-range pigs.
Cows have all
gone in shit. I used to see them in the bars all the time at night when I was a kid.
You mean the two-legged ones?
Free-range pigs, right.
That's
terrible. Now I'm being sexist, too. I'm sorry. Some of them were men, I guess. I was probably one of them.
But I remember when I was little being chased by those big old hogs. My friend's, my cousin's grandma's house. And I always thought that the pigs, their noses were hot. It's because they were always red, you know. Yeah. I thought they'd burn you or something, but...
How did you?
Yeah. I got chased by a hog one time, and he was big. I must have been about 7 or 8. He was chasing me across this field. And believe it or not, a horse came up, and he bit that hog right in the butt section, and that was it. The hog went off running. came to my rescue.
You know, maybe I don't. I don't. Yeah, that is amazing that a horse, he must have done it consciously too, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it puts ideas in the minds of animals. I mean, look at Balaam's ass, right? Up here I see everybody has, all the farmers have steer, and some of them have goats, and some of them have, they all have chickens, but I don't see any swine. I see very little swine up here. It must all come from down south or something. But on the farms, I don't see any up here on the farms. There's plenty of it in the market, but there's none on the farms.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, I think pork has gone down a lot in consumption. I don't know the statistic, but I think it has, just listening to people. There are a lot of people who don't like eating pig like they used to.
Well, not here.
I mean, you get... yeah.
I know the WI like pork. Women's Institute, always eat pork. I can't understand it. They open Jerusalem. We all sing Jerusalem. They'll have a family. Got no knowledge of.
Hey, how can it be that Dorcas is dropping off all the time?
I don't know what's happened. First time.
Could be sunspots.
I'm going to. Hopefully.
Sunspots. That would be amazing. I don't think they affect the internet as much as they do the ham radio. Well, Barbarian Man, where is where is Nibiru? But look, if Bob in California is here, so if he had that link and the coordinates to Google Sky, yeah, you know, he showed us certain coordinates to Google Sky. That's a program where you could see the stars. It was, I guess, it's put together from pictures, right? Google Sky had one certain link, and the coordinates and the rectangular area of the night sky was blacked out. We were just joking that it was good fodder for conspiracy theories, right?
Yeah, usual. I have seen that black spot myself. I said, lift up your shoulder, whatever it is.
Oh, Bob put the link in. If you click on that, and he'll give you the coordinates that you put in the little copy and paste into the little box, and you'll see a rectangular part of the sky just blacked out. And it's pretty funny because you could say, oh, they're trying to hide something there. That's why it's blacked out. It might be true.
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
There must be a logical reason for it, I would think, but. Who knows?
That's right, but anything could be in there, and I won't fool myself with it. I really don't care about the whole Nibiru story. I heard too much about it, and I said, forget it.
Well, Bob just put the coordinates in for the link.
Oh, there you are, yeah.
And maybe you could tell us why it's blacked out. I don't know.
Yeah. I've looked at the blackness is still at the same position. It was in Orion, as far as I remember. And if it's all the time still at the same spot in Orion, then you can forget Nibiru completely because the thing moves. And if it moves, it's not always in Orion, it's passing through the constellations.
Well, right, but I don't think this is a live image. I think this is just taken at a particular time, right?
Yeah.
This image is from photographs that were pieced together, I believe.
Okay. And what I'm going to see now from NASA, what kind of a certain picture of the day? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that was the one I got there.
The moon. Well, this cone is not in the bureau. Yeah. But it's a nice picture. It's a yellow shadow of the large volcano, yeah. That is right. Yeah.
Yeah, you get a picture every day or something like that.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Some of those pretty nice photography.
Yeah, that is right. They do so. Yeah. That is right. Yeah. But now that I'm in Vero, since I know where the original story came from.
I know it's all garbage. I understand it's just
garbage.
the fable of one perverted man's
right.
mind.
Now, he's giving you another opportunity. Let's see what that is doing.
Well, when you see the night sky, pictures of the night sky and portions are blacked out like this, well, it opens the door for conspiracy theories, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never took the challenge to say, hey, I know where the spot is about, so I can take a picture of that area by the camera. I could do it. So far, I didn't do. But you need to have good weather. And on the other hand, the few hours we have, I don't waste my time on peculiar things. Yeah, the picture of you use Java. Oh, maybe the Java is supposed to be available on me. Okay. I don't have Java on this one. Hey, that's right. Yeah.
No Java?
I can't show it up. Then I have to install it. And there was so far no reason for doing this. So, William and I, we have been checking all that we could use. I'm having here a new computer. It's now an XP computer, not anymore the old Windows 2000. We've got too many problems with Windows 2000. So
well, that's a step up anyway. I mean, Windows 2000
is much faster.
Oh, he's only years old.
It was, yeah, that's right. Yeah. But it still worked. It came from the company, the old machines. But this one was one of the oldest companies, the oldest computers William had in his house, and he said, yeah, I'm not going to use it anymore. So we reprogrammed it, and it's now working here, and it works perfect. The quality is much better. Yeah. Except that the internet connection we have now, the optical line, and now we simply do say, yeah, but your router is not good enough. You need to have €100 and your new router. I said, this is just treatment. I have been paying 5 years for no signal at all. And they told me that the original router was capable of doing it. No, there is now something else. And I have to pay another €100. Now, for the time being, I'm not so interested. But the optical cable is there. We are connected with it. It's very interesting. Okay, I'll see to find another box.
He's in Monterey, Dan.
He's from California. Oh, Monterey.
Oh,
okay.
Monterey, yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to save him.
Yeah. Michael Bell, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Monterey's nice up there.
It's a nice area, yeah. Doubtless. But anyway, I got my exhibition of astronomy here in the town hall, of the town village hall. Looks very good. Very good. They have been doing quite a good job on it. So if there's somebody who likes to see the observatory, say, you just go to the town hall, you can see it all. Yeah. Yeah, 90% Mexican, yeah, 90%. Yeah. In a few years' time, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
So where do the whites move out to?
Yeah, too many blacks in. Yeah. No, I know such from a friend of mine who was living in the valley on Los Angeles Valley in Diamond Bar. He was living there, and he went away because there was one church building which was taken over by the Buddhists, and every house round about that church area was bought up by Buddhists. And he said, we've got so many Buddhists. He said, okay, we sold the house and we went to Palm Desert. So he said, yeah, if the whole community area is going to be filled up with Buddhism,
I don't feel well there. So we said, well, just beat it and we're going out. And they went into the desert and they had a nice house there. It's sure. But it was a lot further away. And that happens more often, that whole areas get filled up. If the Beckys are coming in and even more and more and more, then in the end you say, yeah, I'm going to move. That's understandable. But there are so many opportunities to go and reasons why people are going away. But yeah, it's sad, but it is too.
You know, the media, you know, they talk about white flight all the time, but they never properly address the reasons for it.
That's it. Hey, what's
the problem? Like, it's the white people's fault that they don't want to get mugged and robbed and get their homes broken into all the time and get their businesses destroyed and cheated. And it's bad. That must be white people's fault that happens. So
Yeah.
That they flee areas because of that.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, no, I have to be here. And so... That's one of the Hubble. Yeah, photos, PH. Photos of gas in our galaxy.
Well, I'm going to have to get going, you guys. I gotta go down the belt.
Galaxy.
Pick up the kids.
Okay, Danny. Danny, before you leave, I know a couple in Ireland. They're a really wonderful couple. And I'd like permission to give me your email address.
Of course.
They're both identity people. They're just great people. And that they just haven't been able to make it here yet, right?
Uh-huh.
But I know them for I know... I've been they've been writing me for 7 years now. I bet I would bet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, five years before I got out of prison, 4 years before I got out of prison, I was corresponding with them.
Mm-hmm, sure.
They're in Northern Ireland. They've had some tough times, but they got three wonderful sons and that they're good people. That they're salt of the earth.
Yeah, of course.
I'll send them your email address if you don't mind. That'd be great.
More the merrier, you know.
Right. I think they might enjoy it. They're kind of shy, but I think they might enjoy corresponding with you.
Yeah, sure. I'm on Skype now too. I got that Skype thing like.
Uh huh.
And what do you have to do? I think you have to give your email address. Is it to hook up on Skype?
No, you need to have your Skype address.
Right.
Oh, isn't that, I thought it was your address or your email.
No, you don't need. You can have something different.
Mm-hmm.
My Skype ID is the same as the name I use here.
Right.
Right.
But I generally don't answer my Skype much faster than I answer emails.
Yeah. Well, my brother got it for me. He sent me over the webcam, and he said, "Get it."
Yeah.
Okay. So.
And it's so easy with Skype.
Yeah, I just didn't remember how. I thought it was your phone number or something.
Well, I don't know how long I'm going to have Skype because Microsoft just bought the company, and once the ads and the bullshit that comes along with Microsoft starts, I'm out of there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have it for my brother up in Idaho there. I haven't seen him in a while. It comes in handy, you know, I haven't seen him in a while. But anyway, I just thought I'd let you guys. I think mine's just Danny Dewright. I think that's, I don't know
you
what else
do.
I can't think right now what else it goes.
Yeah.
But
I don't think there'll be two of those.
Yeah.
That's right, right.
Tia, didn't I got your email, or your Skype, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I sent it to you.
So, yeah, I think mine is just, the same thing. It's just Dan, well, it's just Danny Do-Right. That's it.
Yeah.
His brother Dudley was actually a Canadian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's dead. Danny's alive. But anyway, yeah, I guess you could try to get a hold of me on Skype too. But also, you know, I try to check in on on TeamSpeak in the mornings. And if anybody's interested from Europe, gab a little bit. So, but anyway, you guys all take it easy, and Yahweh bless you all. And it's great meeting like this and talking to you, and we'll be in touch.
So, okay.
Yeah, all you European people, you know, this is open 24/7, right? This server is always open.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I try to check in and see if anybody's on. So, Bavarian, you're going to have to check in sometime in the morning while you're having your tea. We can gab.
Yeah, during the day, there usually aren't too many Americans here, but
no.
Yeah. And in the evening, a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to get a hold of somebody, catch somebody on the TeamSpeak in the morning. That's great. Okay.
After work.
Take care, Danny. Yeah, okay, God bless.
Okay, bye-bye. See you.
Bye-bye.
Going to leave you as well now. Say goodnight.
Okay, Dorcas, it's great to have you back. And may Yahweh bless you.
Okay, see you back again. Cheerio. Bye-bye. Group is getting smaller.
Yeah, well, I was going to suggest maybe we end it here if nobody had anything else of
what about
of substance to offer. I mean, if anybody wants to say anything, I'm willing to listen, but...
No, it's fine.
I only have to know the next round. It's, here's my... May, June, July... It's on this side. So,
well, 2 weeks from today. I mean,
2 weeks from today. That
would be the 21st.
15th. The 21st. Okay. 21st. I'll write it down. See you.
Okay. We'll be back here on.
Okay.
We'll be back here on July 15th. And thanks for being here, everybody. And praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh.
Okay. Praise Yahweh.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Cheerio.